Everybody had a wonderful day. So just to conclude the first chapter of Maseches Bikurim, and remember the fundamental obligation in terms of generating a requirement to bring the Bikurim is land ownership, as the Torah says, Reishis Bikurei Ad Masecha Tavi Beis Hashem Elokecha. So earlier in the chapter, in the sixth Mishnah to be exact, we discussed transactions where there was a presumption that land had been transacted as well. If you sell a certain number of trees, even if you didn't stipulate that the land should be included in the sale, there is a presumption at some point that land is included in the sale. So the Chachamim, the majority position is that the minimum amount of trees to satisfy this requirement would be three trees. Hakone shloshe ilanos v'soch shel chavero maybe v'kore. Rabbi Meir, as we saw in the sixth Mishnah, so he draws the line a little bit earlier, and he says, afilu shnayim, even if it's only two trees that are transacted, Bistam, without actually articulating or verbalizing as part of the sale that there's a land transaction here, there's a presumption that land was transacted to be able to take care of the trees. Now, I was looking carefully at the Rambam and researching for tonight. The Rambam seems to have a little bit of a nuanced position about this. He says, even though it's clear that you don't really own the land, by virtue of the fact that you have these three trees, it's as if you're a landowner, and that suffices for purposes of generating an obligation to bring the Bikurim. That is to say, there appears to be a machlokes between the Rambam and the other Rishonim as to whether what's going on here is a implicit land transaction, that would be the majority position, or the Rambam is saying it's not really a land transaction, but it's the equivalent of a real estate transaction because you're dealing with the acquisition of trees. Now, Rabbi Meir, who again takes the position that two trees is sufficient to generate an obligation to bring Bikurim, and for that matter to recite the Mikra Bikurim. Remember, the Chachamim were misupak about this, and because they considered a suffix, they said you'd have an obligation to bring the Bikurim, but there'd be no commensurate obligation for Mikra Bikurim. So even Rabbi Meir will agree that purchasing one tree without stipulating that the land is also being purchased is insufficient to generate an obligation to bring Bikurim. However, if it is explicitly stipulated, everyone will agree, even the Chachamim, that since this is a land transaction, now you could say that the trees that are growing off of your land, even if you own a very small parcel of the land, basically just the area surrounding the tree, that meets the definition of Reishis Bikurei Ad Mascha Tavi Beis Hashem Elokecha. And hence, the next line of the Mishnah is, Kana Ilan V'Karkao, if you buy not just a tree, but the land that surrounds it, maybe Vikore, everybody will agree to that, even the Chachamim, because this was an explicit real estate transaction. The criterion in the Pasuk, Reishis Bikurei Ad Mascha, it now is your land. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, and this seems like a total non sequitur, we'll see, it may relate. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Af Baale Arisus V'Chachoros Mevi'in V'Korin. So to review back from the second mission in the chapter, we talked about the concept of what Arisin and Chachoros are. So Arisin are basically sharecroppers. They work for a certain percentage of the land. The Ramban in Sefer Bereishis said the standard rate would be 20%. And the Chachoros, I mentioned in the context of Mishnah Bet, that's what Shlomo Yaros likes to refer to as the risk-averse Arisin. In other words, they don't want to deal with the fact that there may be no bounty whatsoever this year. If you're only getting 20%, 20% is zero, is still zero. So the Chachoros were basically tenant farmers that worked on a salary. So be that as it may, nobody's presuming that they have any kind of land ownership. And yet Rabbi Yehuda comes along and he says, Af Baalei Arisus V'Chachoros Mevi'in V'Korin, which leads everybody to wonder, you know, if you go back to that second Mishnah, nobody disputed the fact that the sharecroppers and the tenant farmers were not considered landowners and therefore would not only not recite the Mikra Bikurim, but they did have no obligation to bring the Bikurim altogether. So there are effectively two possibilities. One possibility, which is definitely the majority interpretation, is Rabbi Yehuda simply disagrees. And Rabbi Yehuda says that you don't actually need to be a landowner for purposes of bringing Bikurim, apropos the Rambam that we just cited before, that if you only own the tree, so that suffices, that makes you the equivalent of a landowner. So if you're a tenant farmer or a sharecropper, that gives you enough of a stake in the land so that it satisfies the Torah's requirement of Reishis Bikurei Ad Mascha. The Torah didn't actually require land ownership. The only difficulty with that is then why wouldn't that be back in the second Mishnah when this topic of sharecropping and tenant farming was first raised? So it very fascinating comment. The Rashi Mishnah, based on the Yerushalmi, has a different suggestion as to what Rabbi Yehuda's position might really be about. So he says, no, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't dispute that a regular sharecropper or tenant farmer does not have a stake in the land that would be sufficient to generate an obligation to bring Bikurim. However, if you read the Mishnah carefully, it doesn't say, as it said earlier in the chapter, Arisin v'chachoros. What it says is Ba'ale Arisus v'chachoros. Ba'ale, which the Yerushalmi says is Bate Av, people who have been sharecropping and tenant farming on the same parcel of land for generations. By the way, as happened in the American South following the Civil War, you know, people have an attachment to land going back 200 years, right? Especially if they were originally slaves on that particular plantation. So the Rashi Mishan says this is a different category of people entirely. These are people with an intergenerational connection to land. And even though they don't have a deed, they don't have formal title to the land, they have something which is the functionally the equivalent of that based on their long-term connection to land. And thus he takes the position that these intergenerational sharecroppers and tenant farmers, because of their long-standing connection to land, would indeed have an obligation not only to bring the Bikurim, but to recite the Mikra Bikurim as well. So this would mean that it's not a frontal machlokas with what we discussed before, the average sharecropper, tenant farmer, though it would still remain a minority position. We do not accept the position of Rabbi Yehuda and Halacha, though conceptually speaking, it's an absolutely fascinating distinction to draw between somebody who happens to be an itinerant tenant farmer, sharecropper, and an intergenerational sharecropper, tenant farmer.